Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Two Dudes perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
To excuse my dramatic pause, I woke up this morning with some sort of tension-type headache.
Well, you should be more relaxed when you wake up in the morning. You must have been having painful thoughts or dreams or something.
I don't know. I had kind of a stressful, busy week. And I can almost feel them coming on sometimes. Like, I feel like my neck and shoulders get all tight like a day or two before. Hmm. And then it seems like on the weekends when I'm not having anything to be stressed about, that's when the headache strikes. It's like, It's called a letdown headache. I was doing some internet MDing about it.
Well, you might have that they showed on the news this week that they show where cell phone use in young people is causing them to grow horns.
Well, there's only one problem to that. I'm not really a young people, but...
Well, compared to me, you are, but most people are compared to me.
It's doubly true.
You young whippersnapper!
Carl Barson in an interesting article, and the title was, Thousands of Cases May Need to Be Reexamined Because Judge Was Drunk at Work.
Well, that's not good for a judge to be drunk at work, and It blows the whole thing about sober as a judge.
Sober as a judge, yeah. Like, yeah. What's that mean? Judge William T. Marshall of Columbus, Ohio, was accused by family members in February of going to work under the influence after his mother and daughter filed for guardianship over him. So, basically, they said he needs a guardian to appoint for him because he's drunk all the time. And, by the way, he shouldn't be hearing this because he's the judge.
Well, you know what? That could be a vested interest that was involved in that. I mean, they needed independent third counsel to determine if he was actually drunk or an alcoholic because... It sounds like there might have been, like, financial incentives or something going on there.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. People tend to say different things in these guardianship petitions.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, maybe they're absolutely right, but there could be more to the story.
Well, the Ohio Public Defender's Office said they're going to launch a review into it to see if any of the 2,707 cases that involve prison time may need to be reviewed over the span of his 15-year career as a judge.
As well they should be.
The one little asterisk there was... None of those cases involve the death penalty, though.
That's good.
Well, that's good.
So there's nobody that's been drunkenly sent to their death.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Don't give him those kind of cases. Just give him the light ones. Give him the drunk driving ones.
The judge did receive a recent suspension by the Ohio Supreme Court's Board of Professional Conduct because he improperly inserted himself.
He inserted himself?
A pregnant pause.
Yes.
Into his daughter's speeding ticket case.
Oh, man, that sentence could have gone so many different directions. I'm glad it went that way.
Yeah, it's all about how you read it.
Yeah. So. Watch some of those pregnant pauses. They might impregnate the whole story.
But anyway, that was kind of an interesting thing that Carl had shared on the Facebook page. We thought that would be something to bring up. And also, it led to a very interesting comment by Jerry Gunn, which I'm actually going to read his comment. It was underneath that. Tommy Smurl, how about a segment on what a judge does with his time not in court? I assume they spend some time reading other decisions. What else do they do besides drink and run a country club?
Well, and so that was where we got our topic from, is what else do other judges do? But I wasn't sure about, I guess this article was the drinking, but I didn't understand the country club reference.
I've sentenced boys younger than you to the death chamber. Didn't want to do it. Felt I owed it to them. Does that help?
Caddyshack.
That's right. Judge Smales.
That was, what's his name? Ted Baxter.
Yeah.
The old Mary Tyler Moore show that played that part. I forget his real name.
Oh, yeah. It's Knight.
Yeah. Ted Knight.
Ted Knight.
Ted Knight.
His name was
played Ted Baxter on Mary Tyler Moore. It's Ted Knight. He was a judge in Caddyshack. And that's what he said. Once you gave me that quote, I remembered that.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. So that was the country club he was running there, the one that Chevy Chase was playing golf at. And Bill Murray was the groundskeeper there, going after the Gopher Kong.
Let me get this straight. You want me to kill all the gophers? You lock me up and throw away the key.
Gophers.
It's a Cinderella story. He's coming out of nowhere.
That might be the most quoted movie of all time.
That is a hilarious movie if you just like pure childish humor. That's a great movie.
That movie came out, I think, in the early 80s, I think is when it came out. And I will tell you what, when I was in high school and college, which would have been predominantly, well, it would have been the 90s, we were still quoting that movie like all the time. I mean, it was on constant
loop.
Yeah. I do think one of my best Halloween costumes ever is I dressed up as Bill Murray's character from Caddyshack. I had on like a dirty old white t-shirt and a hat and some khaki shorts. It was actually inspired.
And boots.
Yeah, and boots. And I carried around an old set of golf clubs. It was actually inspired by this website called Homestar Runner, which is this old mid-90s type internet website that had all these cartoons on it. And they always dressed up. And they always had the best costumes for Halloween. I saw that and copied that and made that my Halloween costume that year.
That was pretty good.
But, yeah.
So. I bet you were the only one there. You didn't have any doubles, huh? Anybody that wore the same costume.
Yeah, that would have been awkward. No one else dressed up as a character from Caddyshack. It was actually kind of a double costume because I was kind of dressed up as Homestar Runner, who was dressed up as Bill Murray from Caddyshack. So.
Oh, okay.
I guess I could have explained it that way. If somebody did dress up as the guy from Caddyshack, I could have said, oh, no. I'm not dressed up as a guy from Caddyshack. I'm dressed up as Homestar Runner, who dressed up as a guy from Caddyshack. So, totally different costume.
Well, it's a good backup plan.
Yeah. I'm sure I thought that all out.
Yeah.
So, what judges do when they are not drinking or running a country club?
Those are the only two things that they do otherwise.
I do know some judges that drink, never while they're on the bench.
I hope not.
I do not know any judges that run a country club, though, so there's that.
Well, I'm sure there must be some somewhere. I mean, there's so many different judges in the world. There must be. You got some that, use penis pumps while they're on the bench.
Yeah, that was the article that came out a few years ago. It had the what was the quote? They just heard a sudden whoosh from underneath the bench or something along those lines. He's like, it's not my bag, baby.
No, it's not the bag.
We're not talking about that kind of judge. We're actually going to talk about judges that are legitimate judges.
When he'd go home, he'd say, well, honey, do you think it's working? She'd say, no, I don't think so. He said, I'll be the judge of that.
Well, to answer that question, you kind of have to analyze what are the different kinds of judges. So,
good ones and bad ones.
Well,
are there other categories?
It's a very general type way to approach it. I was talking more about the jobs they do on a daily basis.
Oh, okay. I thought you just meant their rating.
So you have trial judges. And yes. Trial judges are the ones that hear trials, obviously.
Oh, I thought that meant they were like practicing, like, you know, they were trial, and they if they passed it, then they got to be a judge.
And these are the ones, like, they also might be municipal judges, like judges that work for a city, basically, or appointed by the city, and they hear like traffic tickets and misdemeanors,
parking fines,
things like that. Your municipal judges generally too. There's one that's been shared on the internet quite a bit. It's some older judge that's got glasses, and he's always being very kind to people and listening to their stories, and they record it. I think it's like in Rhode Island or something like that. But that's a municipal judge. He's always being very kind to people and giving them breaks on their speeding tickets because they're having some sort of hard luck story.
Well, that's not good. Then people will go there just to take advantage of him. You should not become known for those kind of things. And you shouldn't be known as a hanging judge. It shouldn't be the reverse side, you know? You never want to appear before a hanging judge.
Good afternoon, Judge Noose. Municipal judges also generally hear simple possession of drug charges for, like, marijuana and things like that and different paraphernalia, especially when it's not involved in any kind of larger type crime that goes along with it. So, but municipal judges, they usually, when they have their court, it's usually, at least in West Virginia, it's some sort of off time. It's usually in the evening, almost like night court.
Really?
Yeah, because it's...
So they do different hours?
They do. They keep different hours because a lot of times these judges are actually lawyers that are in the regular, like, county courts. But they serve as judges and whatnot in these municipal courts, too. So
is that not like a full-time job?
No, it's not. Well, it could be in a larger city. But around here, it's not.
Wow. I wouldn't have thought that. Yeah. I would have thought once you're a judge, that's all you do is you judge people.
No. So some of these judges are actually, in addition to judges, lawyers that practice as well. Now, not They don't practice in their own courtroom, obviously, because...
They don't appear before themselves?
No.
So they never look in a mirror?
Well, they're not vampires. Now, the other judges, like...
Your Honor? Yes, Your Honor. I would like to plead, Your Honor. Okay, Your Honor. Who's Your Honor?
Doctor. But circuit court judges, those are the ones, that, at least in West Virginia, that are the trial judges. And there's appellate judges, and these are judges that don't actually hear trials, but they hear appeals from trials that have taken place, generally.
So they don't hear it the first time. They hear it when somebody wasn't satisfied with the first time.
Exactly. So, and these judges, their job actually is kind of very different, because a trial judge... Now, trial judges are what I have the most experience with. I mean, I'm in front of trial judges all the time. I was a law clerk from a trial judge. I know a lot of trial judges, so I'm going to talk a lot about trial judges. I don't know too many appellate judges.
You don't?
I don't.
You don't associate in those circles? They're at the country club?
I always win the first time around, so I don't have to go. Zing.
Oh, man.
But now, so judges... You always hear about them having, you know, on TV, especially, you'll see them in front of a jury and they'll be arguing a regular case that has, like, you know, your opening, your closing, your well, before that, you're picking your jury, those kinds of things. But I would say probably for most judges in an actual trial in front of a jury, that's probably what they do least for the most part.
Really?
Yeah.
But they have one on Special Victims SUV every week in front of a jury.
SUV?
Yeah.
Yeah, but in reality, I think that trials are not quite as common, because most cases actually settle before they go to trial. In most criminal cases, on a Law and Order SUV, they settle or get parked.
Not on TV.
They get parked.
They get toasted on TV.
So the most thing that they probably do is they hear motions about these pending cases that are in front of them. So motion practice, if you're not familiar with it, is basically...
Motion practice.
Well, that's what it's called.
Oh.
Anytime you want to move the court to do something or enter some sort of order, you basically have to file a motion and set it for a hearing and argue it to the judge as to why you think that judge should do whatever it is you're asking or grant the relief you're asking for. So your general motions you'll see a lot of times with regards to most cases are motions to compel. Mm-hmm. That relates to kind of like discovery. So basically if the other side's not giving you the discovery that you're entitled to, you would file a motion to compel, and then you'd have to go argue that in front of the judge. Different kinds of motions there might be. There could be a motion to dismiss the case, a motion for summary judgment if there's no actual issues of material fact with regard to the case, and it's just based on the law. You could file a motion for summary judgment.
Well, if you're not speaking quickly enough, would it be a slow motion?
It could be a slow motion. Judges are generally not happy with slow motions because their time is precious.
Oh,
you always hear about judicial economy.
Judicial economy?
Yeah. Well, judicial economy...
Being judicious with your economy?
Judicial economy is a theory that you basically want to not waste the time's court, so you try to resolve as many things as you can at once. So it's kind of a basic theory.
So don't go in there being like Foghat.
I say...
No, that's Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh.
That's slow ride. Take it easy. That's Foghat.
Kind of the same thing. It's Saturday morning. I'm thinking about cartoons.
I say, boy, I say. So, it's a chicken hawk.
Now, you have these motions, and once you argue them in front of the judge, basically, once the judge makes that decision, sometimes they do it from the bench, sometimes they reserve ruling, and they'll issue an order.
Sometimes they come off the bench. Put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to rule. But basically, the way that the actual judge's decision is rendered is through what's called an order. And so a lot of the time, the judge spends going over orders or writing orders or researching orders. So the way motion practice works is you file a motion, you make an argument, and then an order is issued based upon whatever the judge's decision is. Now, some judges will ask attorneys to draft, usually the prevailing party, to draft their own order and send it into the judge. And what usually you do is you'll say, okay, I'll do that. And you'll send it over to the other side and say, let me know if this comports with the judge's rulings. And if so, I'll send it over to the judge for entry.
And is that what lazy judges do so they don't have to write them themselves?
Well, it just depends.
It might be.
I do think there is some of that.
I was just kidding.
I think... For routine things.
And do my work for me. Write up my order and I'll see if I agree with it.
Well, if you think about it, it makes sense.
Tell me what you think I said.
Kind of, yeah. But for certain things, it makes sense because they're very routine and whatnot. Now, if it's for summary judgment, I think writing up your proposed order and sending it to the judge can be a little hard because that's a dispositive ruling on a case. So that's probably more in the judge's domain to go ahead and write that entire order. Now, what some judges will do is they'll say, and this is always a real kick in the butt when they do this, say you file a motion for summary judgment and the other side cross files the motion for summary judgment as well, and you make your arguments and the judge says, all right, well, I'm going to think on this case, but in the meantime, I want each side to submit their own proposed orders for me. And so you basically send an order in, what you think the judge should put in the order. Mm-hmm. And then what the judge does usually is they'll pick and choose from each of the orders and make their own order.
Oh.
I always hate when that happens because it's like you're drafting the order and you think, okay, this is what's going to happen if I win. But you don't know if you won or not. It's kind of anticlimactic, I guess.
Well, I would send it in where the judge reads it and it says, I win, you lose, na-na-na-boo-boo.
That might be appealed. That'll end you up in front of one of those appellate judges.
Oh, well, darn. I just thought that would just be clear cut and to the point.
Now, sometimes if you do win your motion and the judge rules in your favor, you're taking notes and you're saying, this is what the judge ruled from the bench. So you go back to your office and you draft up your order and you send it to the other side. And the other side says, well, that's not what the judge said. Oh, it's not? Well, what do you think the judge said? And they're like, well, the judge said this, this, and this. That's not what the judge said. And so then basically you can enter into this other argument about what the judge actually said from the bench as to what gets put in the order, which can result in a hearing or a motion for clarification for an order and all this. And so sometimes, depending on how litigious the entire thing can be, it can be quite the process. And the judges usually know this based on the lawyers they're dealing with. If there is a particular lawyer who is known to engage in this kind of practice, as far as always arguing about every single little thing, it's very doubtful the judge is going to allow,
leave it open to interpretation much. He's going to be very specific.
Or just say, I'll go ahead and draft the order myself, which I've seen that happen before too.
But even if he does, there could be things that, you know, people interpret differently. Even if he writes the order himself, well, he meant this or that. Well, no, he didn't. He meant this. He didn't mention that.
Well, that's true, but if the judge writes the order themselves and it gets entered, then you really can't dispute what that order actually says. I mean, you can say it's vague or it doesn't mention
right.
This,
well, that's what I mean. They could say, well, right. That's not what that meant, though. That
well,
meant
then
this.
You can again, you can move to, for the judge to, for clarification upon that order, saying, hey, this is we're asking for clarification on this order. It says this and this and this.
We move for further clarification. Yeah. Why? What do you think it says? I think it says, we win. You lose. Na-na-na-boo-boo.
Now, one interesting thing I saw when I was...
The na-na-na-boo-boo is a very important part of that.
When I was writing this up, there was a motion to compel filed, and I was waiting for my hearing, so I was watching two other lawyers argue for this motion to compel. And evidently, this was not the first discovery argument that they had had, and the judge said, I tell you what, I'm not going to rule on this motion to compel, but here's what I am going to do. Every Friday at 3 o'clock, we're going to hold a discovery conference about this case. And I want you to appear in person, not by phone. You're going to come to my chambers, and we're going to talk about what discovery took place this week and if there are any issues. I think basically the judge used that as like, you know, you're getting called to the principal's office once a week to make sure that you're playing nicely.
So, well, but if you're getting paid for it, you don't care, do you?
Well, you don't care, but still at the same time, you don't want to have to do that every Friday at 3 o'clock to have to go to the judge's chambers to talk about discovery.
You should have made it Friday at 5 o'clock. That would have been more of a punishment.
That's true. But
because then they would cut into their drinking and country club time.
I was going to say, the judge probably has some duties at the country club that they have to...
Duties.
...have to respond to.
That's the only place I can go.
Now, there's some other things that judges do aside from these kind of general trial and case type things that we're going to get into, but before that, I believe we have a pending motion before the court today.
Why, yes, we do. Would it please your honor that we approach the bench to pay court costs?
The honor's not here. He's at the country club.
Oh, well, no wonder.
He's having a drink. But come on up!
Well, we have with us today our good friends at SleepNumber.com.
Now, maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed but thought you couldn't afford one. But can you really afford to be tossing and turning on your old mattress? compromising your sleep?
Absolutely, you cannot do that. You must get a good night's sleep so that you can rule clearly on any of your opinions that you need to rule clearly on.
If it's one thing you can't compromise, it's your sleep or your choice of words when you're talking.
That's correct. And there's never been a better time to save on proven quality sleep. It's the lowest prices of the season right now at your nearest Sleep Number store.
I love my Sleep Number pillow because when I lay my head down on it at night, I know I'm getting a good night's sleep.
And so many couples disagree on mattress firmness. Sleep Number 360 smart beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side so it's just right for both of you.
That's one thing you want to be able to choose.
Your firmness.
The Sleep Number 360 smart beds are so smart. This sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yeah. How smart are they?
They're so smart, they sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night. Ba-dum-psh.
A rabbi in a Sleep Number bed walk into a bar. Sleep Number has been ranked number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses by J.D. Power. For 2018 information, visit jdpower.com.
So come in during the lowest prices where a Sleep Number 360 C4 smart bed is now only $1,299. Save $400, only for a limited time.
A limited time. You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you at sleepnumber.com/court.
That's sleepnumber.com/court.
Mike and Tommy say, nighty-night, little buckaroos. Now, Mike, what else might our judges be doing in their off time that might be constructive and not destructive?
So aside from motion practice and trials, which are the things that you would probably associate with a judge.
Motion practice, I picture them doing dancing moves or yoga or something like that.
Working on my forearm.
Yeah. Motion practice. Well, honey, what are you doing down there? I'm motion practicing, dear. Leave me alone.
So the circuit clerk generally sends out letters to potential jurors, whoever get pulled for jury duty. But the chief judge has to read through all the excuses that they send in. Oh. So whenever it says, like, is there any reason why you shouldn't have jury duty, and you send it in, somebody has to go through that. And that's the chief judge's job, is to go through all of these excuses as to why you shouldn't be on jury duty.
Denied. 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 Denied.
And sometimes that work does get delegated to people that work for the judge, such
like
as
law clerks.
Law clerks or the secretary or different things like that to go through it.
Paralegals?
Well, I think
are paralegals different from law clerks?
Yes. A paralegal is basically someone who is not a lawyer or does not have a law degree or is not licensed to practice law.
What the hell are they doing in there then?
Well, they're kind of like
empty the garbage cans?
No, if you're relating to like the medical field, they'd be more like RNs.
Oh, okay.
So they have training and they're knowledgeable about things, but they're not like the doctor or the final decision maker on the issue, I guess. Maybe.
Okay.
So I would say if you're trying to equate it like that, that's kind of what a paralegal does. Now, a law clerk generally is someone who has gone to law school and is basically the lawyer for the judge. The judge says, hey, I need you to research this issue for me. I need you to write this order. I need you to do this or that.
So they're actually a lawyer. They've passed the bar. It's not like they flunked out, so they became a law clerk.
Right. Now, they may or may not have passed the bar, depending on the job requirements. Mm. In West Virginia, to be a circuit clerk, law clerk, you don't actually have to have passed the bar, but you have to have graduated law school and take the bar every time it's offered, I think. So you have to be working towards passing the bar.
So you could be a failed lawyer and be a law clerk.
You could, yeah.
If but, that's your ambition in life.
Right. But a law clerk, getting a job as a law clerk for a judge is more one of the more prestigious type jobs to have out of law school. So you generally, those aren't reserved for people who would be akin to being a failed lawyer.
Unless it's like your uncle that's a judge or something, and the rest of the family is forcing him to bring the failure son in, the failure nephew in, to give him a job.
That's right, or your old neighbor.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Now, for the jurors that did not get excused, each new term, the jurors have to come in for the initial kind of, I forget what they call it, but basically the jurors come in and they sit in the courtroom, and the chief judge will come in and give them basically a greeting and thanking them for coming to jury service and giving them instructions about how to check to see if they've been called in for a trial or things like that. So as judges are elected, and as someone who is campaigning, this is kind of a good job for the judge to get out there and kind of talk to people and really meet people and make sure that in the future that they would vote for him or her in the future. So,
hey, how you doing, Judge Tom Smurl? Damn glad to meet you.
Yeah. There's coffee and donuts here. Feel
free. How many of you don't want to be here? Okay, you're free to go. Yeah. The rest of you, you want a job? Pays $25 a day.
Well, I don't think they actually do it like that, but I always thought it was kind of a good chance for a judge to basically meet people who would be possibly voting for them. So,
well, I guess that's true.
Yeah, because you don't want to make a bad what's the word I'm looking for?
Impression.
Impression, yes, thank you.
You only have one chance to make a first impression. Remember that, Mike.
That's true. Now, aside from dealing with jurors and potential jurors, judges will sometimes do marriages, adoptions, mm-hmm. name changes.
Name calling.
The one interesting thing about name changes is that basically the judge's job, essentially, for a name change petition is to make sure the person isn't changing their name for some sort of nefarious reason. Like to avoid creditors or because they have some sort of felony or something along those lines. So a name change petition is actually pretty simple, but it's upon the judge to basically make sure that it's for the right reasons. So I always thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, it seems like that would be kind of obvious.
Yeah.
I would think.
So the judges always seem to scatter whenever somebody comes in for marriages. So
they scatter?
They do.
They don't want to be married? They don't want to marry somebody?
Well, it just takes time, and, you know, a lot of times it happens in the afternoon mm-hmm. when they'd probably rather be doing other things like leaving or working on other things. Again, I always thought it's not a bad thing to do. It's a chance for you to probably marry two people who could potentially vote for you, so be nice to them.
You sure think a lot about the votes that are involved here in being a judge.
I know.
I didn't know that there was that much thought went into your judging as where you're going to get votes from the next time you run to be a judge. And most time, judge jobs are nonpartisan, aren't they?
They are nonpartisan.
Or at least in West Virginia, they are. I don't know about everywhere.
They're nonpartisan. So being a judge, there's a lot of campaigning that goes into it. I mean, it's a pretty sought-after job for lawyers. So.
Well, it's funny. I've found around here, once you're elected a judge, pretty much you get reelected unless you really do something bad or unless you just decide you don't want to anymore.
I know.
It seems like once you're a judge, you're one forever.
That's because they probably talk to the jurors and do marriages and things like that.
Oh, so they're doing all this stuff. You learn from the best is what you're saying, huh? I know you spend a lot of time around several judges.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Now I know why. Pressing the flesh.
It's an important thing to do.
Yeah.
Because basically to be a judge, you actually have to be a politician to some degree, which I don't know if it's perfect, if it's a good system or not, but hey, it's what we have.
It is what it is.
Now, one thing that judges do sometimes, which is kind of interesting, is they might ask certified questions.
Certified as opposed to uncertified ones?
That's right. So occasionally, a case will come in to a judge, and it won't be clear as to what the law actually says is supposed to be on this issue. So usually in the instance like this, there'll be some sort of kind of West Virginia code or some sort of statute, which basically there seems to be two different things that mean different things. So what the judge might do is send a certified question up to the Supreme Court to see if the Supreme Court will answer it. The Supreme Court can either decline to answer it or issue an opinion as to answering the certified question. So sometimes judges ask questions.
Well, that's good for judges to ask questions so they can learn more stuff. I think even a judge can continue to learn.
That's true. And speaking about judges asking questions, whenever there is a witness on the stand, usually the person who called that witness gets to ask questions first, and then mm-hmm. the opposing party can ask on cross-examination, they can ask questions. And then sometimes the judge will ask questions, too, during the direct and during the cross. So
is that unusual?
Not really. I'd say it depends. I would say at some sort of evidentiary hearing that is not a trial, it happens a lot more. But I would say at a trial in front of a jury, the judge will still ask questions, but they'll be a bit more kind of clarification type questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if during a hearing on like child custody or something like that, where the judge is making the determination themselves, the judge will ask questions, and they'll be actual questions that would help them make the decision about which way
best in the child's interest.
Yeah, but which way to rule? Because these would be questions that they have as lawyers that would ask these questions, and they want to get to the heart of it. Whereas I think at a trial level, the judge, when they ask questions of a witness, it's generally more along the lines of clarification. So the lawyer might have said the person was coming down the street. Yeah, they're coming down the street. The judge might say, which direction were they headed down the street? So they're
north, south, east, or west.
Yeah, they're actually trying to clarify it for the jury who's listening to it, as opposed to actually saying, well, now why was he coming down the street?
Right. You
know, I mean, they're not going to ask questions like that. They're going to try to clarify it. So,
If it were me, you know, you were talking about judicial economy, I would be the kind of judge that would say, all right, now let me ask you this, and remember, you're under oath. Did you do it? And right there, yes or no, you got it. You got the thing solved, and end of discussion.
Yeah, that's the old Perry Mason approach.
That's right. Drop a book on the floor and see if they turn around and look real quick.
Yeah,
that your neck's not broken.
That actually never happens.
Oh, man. It is on SUV.
Keep asking questions. I think he's going to break soon.
Yeah. Did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it?
One other thing that judges do as part of their job as a judge is they have to swear in new police officers and other public officials. So that's one thing that they have to do. Like for whenever there's new sheriff's deputies, you'll see those pictures on Facebook occasionally that the judge swore them in.
Or so there's swearing involved in being a judge, huh?
They're swearing.
You have to be able to swear.
Drinking, swearing.
Drinking, swearing, and women. Or at least penis pumps.
Yeah.
Maybe not women.
Or men.
Yeah.
So there's that. They also have to swear in other public officials, too, like the different clerks and people that have these county jobs and things like that. They come in and have to take an oath before the judge. And that's just going to depend on how the individual law is written as to what they're supposed to be doing. So, now, the other thing that judges have to do, they have to conduct research about different laws that have passed and different opinions that have come out that could be binding precedent on different cases they have.
Is there like a magazine that comes out with recent rulings that you can subscribe to as a judge? Kind of like doctors have that, what is it, New England Book of Medicine or Journal of
Medicine?
Yeah, something like that they do keep themselves up to date?
There are. There are different weekly publications that come out that talk about all the different appellate decisions that have come out.
Really?
And, yeah, they're organized by subject generally.
Huh.
And it lets you look up the different things that take place.
Do you think most judges are pretty thorough about keeping up with those?
I'd say they generally are. If you think about it, being a general circuit judge on the trial level, it's a pretty hard job because you're not only doing civil cases, you're also doing criminal cases. You have to know about, for example, the different requirements for a name change, different things for an adoption. There's a lot of different knowledge you have to have. Now, whenever you have two lawyers in the room who are arguing a case, a lot of times the judge will basically ask the lawyers to kind of educate the judge as to what they think the law should be. So that gives the judge kind of an idea as to what each attorney thinks it should be. And then usually what happens is the judge has to go and kind of look at what each side says.
Decide which lawyer he likes the most.
And decide which lawyer is presenting the correct argument.
Oh, okay.
So the other thing judges do is there will be judicial conferences where all the judges will get together and there'll be continuing legal education basically for all the judges. And actually, one of those just took place, I think it was last week or the week before, here in West Virginia. So,
and they just happen to play poker and drink while they're there, but it's a conference. Yeah, they're there for their education.
I don't know. I got to think that most of the judges that are around here, the sober as a judge moniker seems to fit pretty well.
Well, I have heard no stories of any of them, so.
Yeah. They seem to be pretty straight shooters, so.
Well, I know they all get reelected.
They do. So, the other thing that these judges do, even a trial judge actually might be an appellate judge too, because there could be a lower court, and if you get a ruling in a lower court that you feel is improper, it's your chance to appeal it, would basically be to the next court, which could be a trial court. So, sometimes even trial judges have to sit in an appellate seat as well. For example, here in West Virginia, the municipal courts that I talked about, they get appealed to circuit court, magistrate court, which those judges are actually, that's the ones that are kind of like the justice of the peace type thing where they're actually not lawyers.
Right.
They're just elected judges.
Yep.
Those get appealed to the circuit court.
They just have to have a certain amount of training, right?
They have to be go to some kind of classes. High school diploma.
But then there's some kind of classes they take now, don't they,
Once they're elected.
Yeah, once they're elected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also family court cases in West Virginia get appealed to the circuit court, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the jurisdiction of family court actually derives from the circuit court. But family courts were established because to take the burden off the circuit courts because they were hearing too many family cases.
Well, but with the opioid epidemic here in West Virginia, the family cases have gone through the roof.
They have. Although the family courts here don't hear the CPS and abuse and neglect cases. They just basically hear the divorce and the guardianship type stuff. So.
Well, but there's a lot of guardianship ones because of opioids, because all the parents are going to jail, and it's who's left to keep the kids.
Yeah, grandparents.
Yeah.
We have a lot of grandparents raising kids these days.
Mm-hmm.
So. Now, how do lawyers become judges? We kind of already touched on this a little bit, but basically, you have to run for office. And there's certain qualifications you have. Usually there's some sort of prerequisite that you have to have been a lawyer for a certain amount of time before you're eligible to run for judge or run for office. And that's basically about it. There's no real qualifications like having to have had so many trials, having to have done certain things. It's basically just a time.
But you do have to be a lawyer.
I would say, yes.
Other than magistrate court.
Right. Now, there's probably other systems out there where you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge, but it's probably similar to the magistrate system we have here in West Virginia.
I was just thinking, like, you could just run and say, look, I'm going to apply the common sense method. The heck with those U.S. laws. I'm going to apply common sense because I'm a common man, and most of you all are too, so I'll be just ruling on you.
I voted for Judge Reinhold because I loved him in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
It takes one to know one. That's my running. That's my platform. It takes one to know one. I'm one of you, and I know you.
Judges can be appointed sometimes when there's a vacancy.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the governor to appoint somebody onto the bench. They can be elected, as we said. And also, like we said, they run for election. Appellate judges in our state for the Supreme Court, they run as well. And so that's an elected thing, too. We actually had that not too long ago.
And the Supreme Court ones run, too.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Oh, I thought you said the appellate ones.
Well, we only have one appellate court in West Virginia.
And is that the Supreme Court?
It is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we do not have...
The appellate court and the Supreme Court is the same thing?
Well, here it is. We do not have an intermediate court of appeals.
Oh, so when you appeal something up, it goes directly to the... Once it goes out of a circuit court, then it goes directly to the Supreme Court?
Correct.
Wow, that's a shortcut.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of states, there's the intermediate court of appeals... but we don't have that here. So.
Well, in New York, your first step is the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, their naming's all backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
They want you to think it's pretty serious right from the get-go because they got too many people to do it over and over.
Yeah. There was a bit of a push to change our court name, the Circuit Court, to Sirius Court, but it didn't happen.
Sirius Court?
Yeah.
Is that like the radio network Sirius, or is that like the you better... Watch what you're doing, Sirius.
Better watch what you're doing, Sirius.
Oh, okay.
That was a joke, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant seriously.
No, not seriously.
Seriously?
Not seriously? Seriously, Clark? federal judges don't run. That's the one difference.
Are you serious, Clark?
Federal judges are appointed by the president, and they are never... there's never elections for federal judges. So it's usually a lifetime appointment. And we talked about that before, where they can be impeached and things like that.
The only thing that worries me about lifetime appointments is that it's like you've got nothing to lose, and I feel like that you can be corrupt, become corrupt easier than if you got to work for it.
Well, it'd probably be a bit of a problem if you're up there arguing something to the judge, and the judge says, let me just stop you right there, Mr. Meadows. I want you to know something. I got nothing to lose up here.
And I'm here for life, and you're not. Yeah. I can take your life, as a matter of fact.
I've sentenced lawyers younger to you than in the death chamber. Didn't want to do it. Felt I owed it to them.
That's right. Circled right back around to that one.
Judges, and this happens a lot in federal court, they may have what's called magistrate judges in federal court. And a magistrate judge is a judge who handles motions and smaller, non-dispositive type issues for the actual federal judge.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to argue things in front of the magistrate judge, even though the actual case is in front of a federal judge. And they handle, like I said, the smaller things. So the magistrate federal judges are different than like a magistrate judge we have here in West Virginia. So
that makes me think that they're sitting at a little desk right in front of a big desk where the other judge is sitting at the big desk behind him. He's down at a little desk.
Okay, speak up. What is it? Well, see, you can't talk to the boss.
Kind of like the guy at the door of the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
What's your business? State your business.
Well, now, if they sit at the small desk, I want to ask you where these people sit, because sometimes judges can appoint what's called a special master.
A special master?
Yeah. And a special master is basically a lawyer who is not a judge, but the judge has appointed them a special master and given them a task to make a determination about some sort of issue. So usually it can be like discovery issues because, like I said, no judge really wants to sit around and listen to two lawyers fight about privilege and what should be disclosed and what shouldn't. So they'll appoint a special master and say, hey, you're going to be the special master in this case to handle discovery. Hmm. So they have the power to make a recommendation to the judge, and then the judge is the one who actually enters the order. So,
well, this is, I guess, a little bit of insight in the inner workings of my brain, but when you say that, the first image that flashes before my head is that they're dressed all in black like a ninja, and they even have a mask on and everything, and they're twirling one of those things that ninjas carry around there.
Nunchucks?
Well, not nunchucks. It's like a stick.
Katana? More than,
yeah, something like that.
A sai?
Yeah, they're twirling one of those things around, and it's like, appear before the master, what do you know? And they beat it out of you just so that you don't waste the real judge's time. That's the image that I get when you say that.
Well, it's odd you say that because I have appeared in front of a special master, and although they were not dressed in black and they were not using that same verbiage, they were actually were twirling a sharpened stick. So
yeah?
Yeah.
Man, it's so funny. Maybe I'm like psychotic or something that I get these images that come into my head and I picture these things.
That was a joke.
Oh. I thought maybe I was that good.
Are you serious, Clark? You're especially gullible this morning.
I just want to be right. That's all. I'm just trying to be right.
So, yeah, that's kind of a breakdown as to what judges do when they are not drinking or running a country club, I guess, because that was the threshold question.
That's correct. So, what do judges do when they're not drinking or running a country club?
They do.
There
all
you
those,
go.
They do
Jerry
all those
Gunn.
Things. They also, if it's the chief judge, they'll issue different orders for their circuit or whichever, whatever their domain is called. Like, for example, there could be certain procedures that are in place. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are filing a motion, that there might be like local rules that are going to be proposed that you have to follow too. So they might have to publish those. And that's about it. I can't really think of anything else that a judge might do. I'm sure there are some things, but that's a basic rundown.
Well, all right. Hey, did you know that Jerry Gunn has a famous great-grandfather?
James Gunn?
Tommy Gunn.
Tommy Gunn. I was going for the Spy Hunter theme.
I was going for the easy theme.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't picture Tommy Gunn.
I figured it had to be a great grandfather because you think of a Tommy Gunn like back in the 20s or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got our Tommy Gunn. What did the Tommy Gunn really stand for? What was that a nickname for?
Was it basically a gun that was carried by the British soldiers?
No.
Because they were Tommies?
It was a Thompson automatic machine gun.
Oh.
And they called it a Tommy Gunn.
Have you seen the movie Snatch?
Yes.
It's like, this is my mate, Tommy. If you ask him, he'll tell you his name for a gun. That's not true, though. He's named after his uncle. All right. It always makes me think of that.
That's Brad Pitt in that, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But that was Jason Statham that said that line in Snatch. So.
Yeah. Well, I learned that other from an old Warren Zevon song.
Oh.
Rolling the Headless Thompson Gunner.
Talking about the man.
That's right.
That was always kind of a weird song.
He had several weird songs, but he was drunk all the time.
That's true.
He was an admitted alcoholic.
He did not run a country club.
And he did not judge.
He tried to enjoy every sandwich, though.
That's right. Send lawyers, guns, and monies. The crap has hit the fan.
The last time he was on David Letterman, that was his advice, because he had been diagnosed with cancer. He didn't have much longer to live. Mm-hmm. And David Letterman, I think, asked him, do you have anything else you want to say? He said, enjoy every sandwich. And I always thought that was a very profound statement, because eating a sandwich is something kind of a mundane task you do on a daily basis. But he's saying, enjoy
it. Yeah. Why not?
So that's my deep thought for the day. Mike's deep thoughts.
Enjoy your sandwich.
That's right. Well, did anything that a judge does or doesn't do surprise you?
I didn't know that there was a journal that they could keep up with rulings, although I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think they should stay well informed. Otherwise, they might be giving an opinion that came from the 1800s, and there was something much more recent that occurred.
Well, when you have an opinion from the 1800s, and it hasn't been overturned, do you know what that's called?
The Constitution?
No, that's well-settled law.
Oh, well-settled?
Yeah, Judge, the law is well-settled on this matter.
Well, but if you hadn't been reading the latest update, you might be out of date. What if you're just reading the journal from 1800?
Well, there's a way...
It was a recent ruling in those days.
There's a way to check, though, to determine if a case has been overruled or discussed.
You Google it? It's called... Judges do a lot of Googling?
Well, it's generally called shepherdizing.
Shepherdize? That sounds like plagiarizing.
Shepherdizing. Shepherdize, basically, Shepherds was a book, well, back when we had books, where you would actually go through and determine if a case had been overruled or talked about. And it kind of became a, I forget what the term is for whenever a commercial thing becomes almost like a verb. Kind of like when you're searching something on the internet, when you say you're Googling something.
Right.
I mean, you might be using a different search engine, but you just say, I'm Googling something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what shepherdizing has become. I think only one company has the right to actually shepherdize things, but it's called shepherdizing for the most part. But they call it case check or fact check or things on different ones. But, but yeah, so you can look at a case and you can shepherdize it and determine if anybody's has any court has overruled that. So if you look at a case from 1800 and it's still based on the same code and everything like that, and it hasn't been overturned, then you can say, you have the ability to say the law is well settled.
Well, that's like a final clincher as a lawyer, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, the other side would say, that's old case law. Well, it's such a good ruling, no one's had to touch it.
Well, don't you think it's about time?
No. Unless it's against my case.
We're not going to let those Tories decide what we were doing.
So, well, I think that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs.
So, legal briefs is a part of the case, or part of the case, part of the podcast, or part of this episode, I don't know, whatever you want to say, where we talk about different legal terms.
Whatever you normally say. Say what you normally say. Part of the program?
Ditto. Supra. So, my first question is, Tommy, what is a special master?
A special master is a guy that's not necessarily a lawyer, but he's appointed by like a big judge, a Supreme Court judge, to handle certain aspects of law. So before he goes before him.
Yes and no. The special master does not.
And he's dressed like a ninja.
Does not dress like a ninja. Does not have to be twirling any sharp sticks, and. Does not actually, although they don't actually have to be a lawyer, I would say 99% of the time they are. They're either a lawyer, a former judge, or something along those lines.
But they don't have to be, so I can still aspire to be one.
You could be one, yeah. You could just put a business card, Special Master Thomas Smurl.
Special Master, document management is my specialty.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that if you were... an expert in some sort of field like document management or things like that, that if there was an issue that needed decided, that needed some sort of special expertise decide on it, where the judge didn't want to try to learn or hear all that, they could say, I'm going to appoint a special master who knows all about document management, and they'll make a decision and a recommendation to me about this.
I'm going to print up a business card and make myself available to judges as a special master on document imaging.
All right. There you go.
There you go. I don't know. Hope that pays well.
I think it's volunteer work.
Volunteer work? I do enough of that already. The theater's about run me in the ground.
So, name some tasks aside from trials and motions that a judge might do.
Well, he might study up on recent rulings and things like that. Mm-hmm. He might call in or he addresses the letters that come in about jury duty as to whether to let people off or not. And then he brings them in and does their initial round with them and politics. Evidently, politicking is a very important part of it.
If you greet people. If you want to be running for re-election, probably is.
Yes. So that's part of what they do, besides running a country club and drinking.
And marrying people.
Marrying people.
Adopting people.
Well, they don't actually marry and adopt them themselves. They perform the services for others.
Well, they can. They're not prohibited from it, but, you know.
That's true.
They're probably prohibited from doing their own, though.
Yeah. You can't marry yourself, and you can't appear before yourself.
If you're a vampire.
Well, that's true. Yeah, vampire or a judge.
Unless you were
a judge lawyer.
Unless you were invited into the courtroom. Then I think you can appear.
Unless you have garlic.
Right. Something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But no crosses. Separation of church and state.
That's right.
Wow, that made my head hurt. And the last question. What is a certified question? And I'm actually going to certify this question, so.
A certified question is one that you have to certify as true.
What?
I don't know. I remember you saying that, but I don't know. They write up certified questions. It's ones that people have to answer for the court ruling on a case or something.
Well, basically, if there's conflicting law, a judge can issue what's called a certified question up to the higher court and ask for a opinion on that issue of law.
Oh.
So it's a certified question to the higher court saying, hey, make a determination about this for us because there seems to be a conflict here. So it's either that or they make a decision on it and it gets appealed later on. But sometimes it's better just to ask a certified question. So
I see. And they ask it of a higher court.
That's right.
All right.
Well, that's it. You didn't do too bad.
Well, there's only one thing we didn't cover, though, about this.
What's that?
What kind of judge is Judge Judy?
I don't know. A TV judge?
Well, yeah, but I was just wondering what category she would fall in.
Her jurisdiction?
Well, or, I mean, is she a trial judge? Is she a municipal judge? Or what kind of judge would you say she is? I know she's a TV judge.
Yeah.
And she's the best paid judge in the land.
She would be a small claims trial judge.
Oh, okay.
That's how I would probably describe her.
Well, she's no nonsense, I'll tell you that. She asks a lot of certified questions, because you better answer her or she's going to cut you off at the knees. She doesn't like anybody.
Well, the thing about that, too, is...
She doesn't have to get elected. She doesn't care if you like her.
There's no lawyers appearing in front of her.
No.
So there's no one else to help. No one else to ask questions. So essentially, she's dealing with pro se litigants, and by pro se meaning they're representing themselves. And she's the one who has to ask all the questions. I'm talking about.
She does.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about like regular courtroom where you have lawyers who ask questions, and the judge is just there to kind of be a rule maker, basically.
The other day I was watching it, and the lady was suing her next door neighbor for having cut down her bushes.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like a big hedge that had grown between the two properties because she didn't necessarily get along with the guy next door. So she grew these big hedges.
Spite hedges?
Well, it wasn't exactly that. Here was what happened. The neighbor cut them down, and his reason he cut it down was his house had been broken into about three times.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was because he can't stand on the street corner and see his front door from the street corner because of those hedges. So that's why his house had gotten broken into. So he said he asked her for permission to trim the hedges, and she said okay. And so all he did was trim the hedges, and he didn't see what was wrong with that. So Judge Judy said, how tall were the hedges? They said 18 feet.
Whoa.
And she said, well, how tall were they after you trimmed them? And he said, 3 feet. She said, well, that's more than a trim. No reasonable person would call that a trim. Just because she agreed to a trim doesn't mean you can go from 18 feet to 3 feet. They said, well, how do you determine that because you can see your front door from the corner means you won't be broken into anymore? And the lady said, can I interject something here? And Judge Judy said, what? And she said, every time they broke into his house, they came in the back door. So I don't understand why that's helping.
I need to start watching Judge Judy.
Oh, it's great. It's great. The moral of the story is, watch your back door, buddy. Forget about the front door. That's not where they're coming in.
And 15 feet's more than a trim.
That's right. 15 feet is more than a trim.
It's well-settled law.
That's what she said.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine podcasts.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.